Chapter 1. Theoretical Introduction. Voluntary cooperation to resolve difficult challenges dramatically affects the likelihood that the change will create value. Ownership, commitment, and voluntary cooperation towards a common goal are driven by an inner motivation, a desire to move in the direction the manager has staked out. A desire that is manifested through active and voluntary action beyond that necessitated by the manager's administration of the work. In any change process, there are terms that are non-negotiable. If the employees do not feel an inner motivation, it will impact their ownership of the direction and involvement in the resolution of the challenges. What can the manager do to incite inner motivation, engagement, and voluntary cooperation towards a common goal? The obvious answer is to stake out a direction that the employees feel is meaningful. Right now, I want to present two research-based process management principles that incite inner motivation, engagement, and voluntary cooperation towards a common goal. Principle 1, incremental innovation. And principle 2, process fairness. Incremental innovation. In the case above, the manager's process management was founded on an incremental principle for innovation. That's small, quick steps towards a smaller goal. And the principle of process fairness. Incremental innovation makes it more likely that employees will experience frequent progress in their work towards change. As we will hear later, research shows that frequent progress is conducive to inner motivation among employees. Incremental innovation can also make it easier for employees cognitively and emotionally to deal with major change. Because the bigger challenge is divided into smaller, more manageable phases or steps. Incremental innovation as a product. Incremental innovation can be viewed as both a product and a process. As a product, it is a minor innovation that creates value for the organization or company or citizen. A product is innovative when it is used and is of such a quality that it creates value. For example, when it is possible to service more people using the same or fewer resources, improve the user experience, increase the clinical quality, or reduce the number of errors. The innovation can consist of revised work processes and procedures, use of existing technology, or use of technology in new contexts, such as video meetings between employees at geographical distant locations or between a doctor and a patient. Incremental innovation as a process. Characteristic of incremental innovation is a short development time and relatively low cost. The process often consists of several small, manageable, quick steps where a prototype, for example, a proposal for a work process, is quickly tested in practice and improved upon subsequently. In that process, one quickly finds out if something needs to be improved and revised or if it should be scrapped entirely. When such a small innovation is taken into operation, you are ready to build on it with other innovations that fulfill the strategy or meet the critical challenges. The manager regularly launches development and testing of the next small innovations. Multiple small innovations that build on one another is an approach that I have built into the strategic process design for fair process. That's what we hear about in chapter 2. The objective is to create a culture that is a dominant pattern of viewpoints and actions where staff and management are good at cooperating to quickly develop and test solutions that create value while they run the daily operations. process and result fairness. Research in fairness psychology and decision process shows that inspiration can be drawn from the concept of process fairness, when we need to understand inner motivation and voluntary action in organizations. Process fairness, a term that was originally coined in a legal context, should be differentiated from result fairness, or often called distributive fairness, which has to do with where the organization's members considers the result to be fair. Process fairness has to do with how the process that produces a result is perceived. For instance, in situations where we ask questions such as, what will work procedures and the work distribution look like when we do not refill a vacant position? Or how do we use a new strategy to achieve better coherence between sales, production, customer service, and logistics? The organization members' experience of process fairness often has a strong influence on the attitudes and actions, that is, rejection or acceptance and resistance or voluntarily compliance with the decisions. Research shows a clear tendency for people to experience process results as fair when they find that the process that produces the result is fair. Process fairness can often get organization members to actively and voluntarily support decisions they were against to begin with. Conversely, unfair processes will often preserve, strengthen, and create resistance. Fair process and strategy process. What is needed to create a fair process that resolves the organization's challenges? Research on the process from strategy formulation to implementation shows that when employees are involved in shaping solutions and they know that the manager's motivation behind decisions and the expectations of them, it affects their attitudes and actions. Faith in the management and the quality of the decision increases, the employees will be more willing to impart their valuable knowledge on how things can be done smarter and to actively participate in the implementation of the solutions that management adopts. On the other hand, the research also shows that if just one of these three principles is violated, by involvement, explanation, and clarity in management expectations of the employees, negative dynamics can come into place. The employees will begin to distrust management's intentions and the quality of its decisions. They will have a tendency to withhold important knowledge and be reluctant to implement the solutions that management adopted. The dynamics between process principles, attitudes, and behavior are illustrated in the model below. The process principles will be examined in more detail in the following section. And it now shows a model, the model of fair, unfair process. And there are three process principles, that is, define context, engage and explain. Under attitude, it says trust in the manager, decision and strategy. And under behavior, active and voluntary in creating and testing solutions. In the lower red process, that is unfair process, it says under process, violation of one or more of the above principles, that is define context, engage and explain. And it says distrust in the manager, the decision's quality, the strategy. And under behavior, it says passive in or resisting implementation of manager's decisions. The research behind process fairness have inspired me to formulate a management concept, a change management concept with special focus on execution of strategy and management of incremental innovation in organizations. Fair process. First, I present three practical principles for a fair process. Involve, explain, and clarify expectations. Next, I examine six theoretical concepts from the systemic family of ideas, that is context, positioning, agency, autopoiesis, transparency, and recognition, which together with the three practical principles of fair process constitute a guide for the manager's specific work on the process level of the change. Finally, I discuss a supporting principle for process management. Make sure that the employees can make frequent progress in meaningful work. This progress principle is based on research by Harvard professor Teresa Amabile. I demonstrate how the manager, via his or her work on the process level, can invite employees to assume positions that allow for attitudes and actions that are particularly favorable for achieving process in meaningful work. In the model below, the set of fair process concepts is presented as a house characterized by elements that have their own function while also supporting the other's functions, thus creating a whole. And in the model, it says in the top, define context, that's the roof, and in the bottom you have recognition, that is positioned as cognitive reliable, moral reliable, and value creating. And in the way down the bottom, it says progress in meaningful work. And the pillar says involve, clarify expectations, explain, autopoiesis, positioning, transparency, and agency. Three practical principles. I will start by explaining in more depth the three practical principles: clarify expectations, involve, and explain decisions. All three principles must be in play if those involved are to perceive the process as fair. If just one of the principles is missing, the process will be perceived as unfair, and a negative dynamic will come into play. That is, distrust in the management's intentions, quality of their decisions, and quality of the overall strategy, resulting in reluctance to follow management's decisions. So, first practical principle, clarify expectations. This principle consists of those involved having a clear understanding at all times of A, the direction, B, the framework, and C, the employee's behavior in the process. So A, the direction. What is it that should be possible afterwards that is not possible now? What are we trying to accomplish? B, the framework. What is not negotiable? What is already decided? And what decisions can the employees be involved in or have influence on? C, the employee's behavior in the process. Should they come up with their own ideas or qualify management's ideas? Should they engage in testing solutions and refine them, or merely implement without improving? Principle 2, involve. This principle consists of involving the organization's members in the development and testing of solutions that influence their work. It is important that this is preceded by the first principle, clarify expectations. That is, direction and boundaries of the change. The objective of involving the employees is to create agency, that is, the ability to see opportunities and act on them, so that the employees can apply their valuable knowledge to develop and test solutions to the major challenges. The aim of employee involvement in both the development and testing of ideas is for only the best ideas to survive, increase the quality of solutions, ownership to the solutions, and the speed of implementation, so the solutions can have an effect. Third principle, explain. After involvement, comes decision and explanation. Explain the rationale behind the decisions and criteria for selecting, or even more importantly, rejecting the different individuals' input and ideas in the final decision. Explanation shows that the manager has spent time thinking about the employees' ideas in relation to the organization's challenges. It is here that it is clear for the employees if they can trust that the manager made real involvement. This establishes transparency in the decision-making process and makes it easier to have confidence in the manager's decisions even when the employee's own ideas have been rejected. At the same time, the context and the specific criteria for the manager's approval or rejections are made much clearer, making it possible in the future for employees to propose solutions that fit into the context that the manager establishes when explaining his decision or setting the direction and boundaries of the change. So that was the three practical principles. One, clarify expectations, that is, set the direction and boundaries of the change. Two, involve in developing and testing solutions. And three, explain the rationale behind your decisions. Now I move on to six theoretical concepts: context, positioning, agency, autopoiesis, transparency, and recognition. Context. All action or spoken actions should be understood in context. Here, Gregory Bateson is a particular source of inspiration. Words, sentences, and actions have no fixed significance in and of themselves, but are interpreted in a context. The manager should ask himself, in what context should what I am saying be understood? A critical quality for a manager in systemic practice is being able to set the context and read the context. Reading the context consists of listening to others' statements while asking yourself, what is the significance given context for the other person's statement or action? What is the other person's understanding of the situation? And how did that person arrive at that conclusion? Setting the context means making the context clear for employees, for example, regarding to direction and boundaries of the change, in order to minimize the degree of misunderstanding and to provide direction and a framework for action. At a meeting, it is a good idea for the manager to set the context for the relationship. What do we expect of each other? How should I conduct myself in order to be a good meeting leader or a good meeting participant? Should the employee provide input, ask clarifying questions? You can set the context for the case or the subject, which is the topic we're meeting about. Why are we here and what should we get out of it? What is up for discussion and what is not? What is the objective? What is it we should be able to do afterwards that we cannot do now? What situation do we need to get away from? What should we be moving toward? How does it fit in with the organization's overall strategy? You can also set the context for time. For instance, how much time should we spend on each item? At the start of a development process, the management should set the context for the background objective framework and direction of the entire process. In this phase, the management also lays out the strategic process design for the work towards change, that is, fair process in five phases that we discuss further in Chapter 2. How the process takes place and what the management expects of the employees and how decisions will be made. I'll now list some questions that is often good for management to be able to answer when setting the context of a development process. These are questions that the management can ask itself and try to answer before going into a room setting the context for the employees. What is the situation? What is to be done? What is the objective? What effect is it to have on whom and when? How does it fit in with the organization's overall strategy? What is the boundaries of the change and direction of the change? What is not negotiable? What do we need to discuss, test, and learn more about? What situation do we need to get away from? What should we be moving toward? What is it we should be able to do afterwards that we cannot do now? What will happen if we keep on doing things the same way? What is the time frame? What are the criteria for success? From the concept of context, and I'll move on to the concept of positioning. The positioning concept, which originates from the narrative-inspired discourse theory, differs from the role concept by focusing more on the dynamics in conversations. I differentiate in that context between positions in relationships and positions in communication. First, I will examine positions in relationships. In every speech action, I position myself, and at the same time, I try to position the other person. For example, when the manager says, "I think the action plan is a good proposal for the next 6 weeks' work." It could be an attempt to position himself as a directing manager or B, an involving manager. To position oneself is called first order positioning. The manager's speech action is also an invitation to the employee to assume a position. For example, A as a subordinate who is expected to praise the manager's unchallenged position and implement the action plan. Or B, an employee who is expected to contribute thoughts and ideas regarding the quality of the action plan. The employee can then choose to accept the invitation and either assume the position or reject it. If the employee rejects it, this is second order positioning. If the manager's intention to position herself as a directing manager and the employee rejects their invitation, it is second order positioning when the employee, through the speech action, as he holds in the plan, position himself as someone whose opinion is worth listening to, and by way of experiment tries to position the leader as someone who will listen to it. Another distinction is positions in communication. The manager switches in his communication between knowing positions and non-knowing positions. From the knowing position, one can hear the manager give an answer in the broad sense, from directive management with specific instructions to context setting with direction and clarification of boundaries of the change. In the non-knowing position, one can hear the manager ask questions and listen actively. In that context, the manager may know something about the topic or may know some of the answers, but he assumes a not-knowing position in order to unfold the employee's perspectives, unfold logic, gain new angles on the subject, and check the employee's understanding of the manager's message or insight reflection. In the book, there is presented a model of communicative positions, and they are divided into knowing positions and not knowing positions. Under the knowing positions, there are two. The first one is set context, direction and framework, explain rationale behind decisions. For example, what should be possible afterwards that is not possible now, what is not negotiable. The second position is detailed instruction in the execution of solutions. For example, the checklist when doing X is blah, 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 or the order in which work is to be done is blah, 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 because under the non-knowing positions, the first one is ask open-ended questions with an inquiring mind. For example, what solutions do you see? How does that fit with what Henry suggested? How can we put that idea to work next week? You may also need to be transparent about your non-knowledge. This is a second way to assume the non-knowing position in communication. It could be, for example, that right now the management is discussing if we should move in direction A or B. When I know more, I will pass it on. This way, you communicate that you actually don't know something, and it's not because you are withholding information, but it's because you, as of yet, don't know. This can increase trust in you in certain situations, as we saw in the prologue case at the ward with the nurse, head nurse. So, summing up, there are basically two communicative positions. One, the manager provides an answer, or two, the manager asks questions and listen. The third theoretical concept is agency. Agency is a concept that comes from the narrative-inspired discourse theory, and it is a key concept in narrative theory and practice, which is commonly known to be part of the systemic family of ideas. To experience agency is to be able to see opportunity and act on it, or see possibilities and act on it. In fair process, the challenge is to invite employees to assume an agency position. Therefore, it is important that management, through its organization of the process, demonstrates clear expectations of the staff involvement in developing and testing solutions. This is often best achieved, that is, agency, through manageable smaller goals and multiple small tests of solutions to the organization's major challenges. It makes it easier for employees to see opportunities and do something constructive about the situation and to act, that is, experience agency. Carl Weick was among the first scholars to argue that incremental processes allow individuals to manage and resolve major challenges with less strain on their cognition and emotions. Process management in fair process is therefore based on management of the larger challenge in shorter sub-processes. In the specific facilitation, the solution-focused approach can be particularly suitable. This approach has very specific focus on what it is we want to achieve, the participants' practical experience, and small action-oriented progress and steps towards the goal. To experience agency, that is, being able to do something constructive about the situation, is conducive to the employee's recognition relationship to himself and the recognition relationship between manager and employee. I now move on to the concept of autopoiesis. I will not go into the entire autopoiesis concept here, but simply call attention to neurobiologist Maturana's hypothesis that every individual is a closed nervous system, and that in principle we therefore do not have the same experiences when exposed to the same external stimuli. For example, a manager who informs employees about planned cost cuts and strategic focus points. This can cause both unfortunate misunderstandings, as we saw in the case of the outpatient unit, as well as render difficult the coordination of action via communication. This is best expressed through the slogan, "There is no understanding, only varying degrees of misunderstanding." This perspective of the basic terms of communication has significance in fair process when the manager switches between a context-setting position and inviting clarifying questions and dialogue. If you take the autopoiesis concept seriously, it is an important task of management to ensure that the message in a presentation or information meeting is understood in the manner that it is intended. That is, that the recipients of the message has almost exactly the same understanding of the manager's message. The concept of transparency. As I stated before, explanation is important in fair process. Why did the manager decide what he did? What good will it do? What considerations went into making that decision? What considerations went into the decision to reject certain ideas? This point corresponds to the transparency concept. To aid the employees' understanding of the decision so that they can trust management, it is important for the employees that the process is transparent. This is also true when the situation is complex, when it momentarily becomes unmanageable and there are no good fixed explanations and answers. In such situations, the manager can also resort to making his considerations about the unwieldiness of the situation known to the employees. The manager's transparency surrounding his non-knowledge, his considerations and intentions can increase employees' trust in management and in the process. Transparency thus covers more than just the notion of explanation. A practical example is the department head and his employees who know that the management group is analyzing the situation and making decisions of significance to the department's work. If management is not transparent regarding its non-knowledge, it could create distrust towards management. Silence is often misinterpreted by employees, that something important and unpleasant is being kept from them, for example, that there are going to be layoffs. One way that the management group or department head can deal with this is to be transparent. For example, they could say, the management group is currently discussing whether to take direction A or B. This will naturally be of huge importance in deciding areas to focus on and solutions to develop. But in the meantime, it still makes sense to prioritize the work X, Y, Z because... End of example. It is also important to be transparent on how decisions are expected to be made in the process. We'll talk more about that in Chapter 3. That is, what type of involvement is desired of employees and what can they influence? It follows from the auto-basis theorem that it is the recipient who decides the message, that it is the employees who define whether the process is sufficiently transparent to allow them to trust management. The recognition concept. The last of the theoretical concepts I will examine is recognition. Axel Honneth argues that in man's effort to live a good work life, a fundamental need and struggle unfolds to be seen as cognitively and morally reliable, and as one whose actions create value in the practice community. These forms of recognition constitutes a significant motivational factor that contributes to the dynamics in fair process, including the behavior, active and voluntary in the development and implementation of solutions. Recognition is part of the answer to the question, why do employees even want to get involved in the development of solutions? When management involves employees in the process of developing and testing solutions, employees are offered positions such as A, cognitively reliable, that is that they can offer good solutions, B, morally reliable, that they will do the right thing on behalf of the organization, C, value creating, that is capable of turning knowledge and ideas into new and better solutions that create value in practice. The desire to be considered reliable and value-creating is such a fundamental motivation that employees will have a tendency to accept wholeheartedly management's invitation to get involved in the development and testing of solutions. At the same time, it is critical for employees' inner motivation that they, ethically and professionally, can establish a relationship with themselves as reliable and value-adding for the community. When their employee undertakes the project that the manager has defined, the employee should feel that he or she can and does help lift the organization to a higher level. That is, by seeing that his or her own efforts in the developing and testing of solutions can reduce, for example, waiting lists, increase sales, optimize production, produce better quality, or maintain the number of operations despite fewer personal resources. The objective and the result must be meaningful. Progress in meaningful work. I will now integrate the above practical principles and theoretical concepts into a unified fundamental principle. Make sure that your employees can make small and frequent progress in meaningful work. The principle is based on Harvard professor Teresa Amabile's research. She had 239 individuals in 26 project teams spread out over 7 companies keep a diary for 4 months, more than 12,000 days in all. Her research shows a clear connection between everyday variations in the employee's internal work life and everyday variations in the individual's productivity and creativity. Here is the pattern that Amabile found. Every time a member of the organization expresses positivity and motivation at the end of a working day, it is rather likely that she felt that she made some small progress in, for her, meaningful work. When at the end of the day she reports being depressed, frustrated, and demotivated, she has often experienced setbacks in her work or obstacles that seem too difficult to overcome. It may also be events that make the work seem meaningless. This connection between progress and inner motivation can be viewed as circular. That is, progress and regress affect motivation, and motivation affects the ability to make progress. The demotivating effect of regress is most often greater than the motivating effect of progress. Therefore, we will, in Chapter 2, explore the tool debrief that helps stop setbacks and nurture progress. So what are the consequences of Amabile's research for fair process? Well, one, make the aim of the innovation work meaningful. That is the innovation work merely seen as a cutback and quality deterioration, or both as a cutback and a quality boosting project, that is innovation? To get organization members to support management's project, the manager must succeed in giving them a warranted expectation that their objective is both meaningful and possible to implement. For example, if we do not do that, we will find that we have to turn away more patients and work more overtime. But if we do this, we can treat more patients and reduce overtime. 2. Make it possible to make small and frequent progress in meaningful work. In the strategic process design for fair process, that is in Chapter 2, the principle of progress is built in by working with incremental innovation that allow for many quick steps forward towards a smaller goal. The process is then repeated, building upon what has already been achieved on the path towards the larger strategic objective. 3. Establish a clear direction and framework of the innovation project. If management is unclear as to the direction, what should be possible afterwards that is not possible now, and framework or boundaries of the change, what is negotiable, not negotiable, and what can employees influence, it would also be harder for employees to live up to the actual context. Employees are more likely to appear as though they are doing things wrong. Their position as reliable and value-adding is jeopardized. It is management's clarity in terms of the framework of boundaries and direction of the change that is decisive for wherever employees can consciously try to live up to the context. Theoretical summary. When the manager creates a process with fair process qualities, he invites employees to assume positions where they consciously can endeavor to be reliable and value-adding in relation to the work that the manager gives them, and they tend to accept the invitations. I demonstrated this in the case of the surgical outpatient unit. Conversely, if the manager breaches the principles of fair process, or just one principle of fair process, this invites the employees to assume positions where they adopt attitudes and actions that are unhelpful in resolving the major challenges at hand. For example, they will demonstrate a lack of faith in management's intentions and the quality of their decisions. It will be more difficult for the employees to see what they can do themselves to resolve the major challenges. They will more often feel that the manager is making the wrong decisions, the other department is tackling the work in the wrong way, politicians that are cutting costs in the wrong places. It is the others who need to solve the problems. The employees will drag their feet in the implementation of the solutions management finds and will not make much of an effort to make things work in practice. In other words, they will have a tendency to lose footing in an agency position, that is, the ability to see opportunities and act on them. There are also other things in employees' social sphere that are of significance for what positions they assume and what attitudes and actions they exhibit. For instance, employees can be ethically and professionally in disagreement with the objective and content of the change. Fair process allows for positions, attitudes, and behaviors that are conducive to change, but fair process does not determine.